Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hello, everyone. This is Healthy Gut Girl, Catalina Martone, and this is Stuff Your Doctor Should Know. And guess where I am? As usual, I'm coming to you live. Actually, I always say that I'm coming to you live, but I'm actually not coming to you live. I'm actually coming to you alive in your small intestine. That's where I'm at. And it's really important that I'm in your small intestine today, because the subject that we're talking about has a lot to do with the small intestine and the gut. And it's not only because it biologically has something to do with that, but also because it takes a lot of guts to talk about this subject. Since I started this podcast, I've been wanting to talk about vaccinations, but I didn't want to polarize my audience. I felt like I have a lot of information to share with people, and I didn't want to lose any audience members because I was coming across as some anti-vaxxer or something. But in my studies, in my research, and over the many, many, many years now, probably 12 years now, of looking into all of this, this particular subject, I'm realizing that I'm actually not an anti-vaxxer, and that this information is going to be useful for everyone. And those of you that have been my listeners know that I've been searching for somebody amazing to have this conversation with, someone that's more knowledgeable than me, someone who I consider an expert in the area. And so I found one. And after I talk about this particular product that I want to tell you about, I will introduce her. But the product I want to talk about is significant to this topic of conversation, because one of the most important things that you always hear me talk about is helping to re-inoculate your gut with healthy bacteria. So whether you feel or think or suspect that you may have some kind of, or your child may have some kind of vaccine injury or any kind of illness or imbalance, the best medicine is to, on your own, by yourself, in the comfort and privacy of your own home, create your own probiotic foods to help you to start to, once again, re-inoculate. That means to reestablish, to reintroduce, and grow the beneficial bacteria in your gut that help boost, support, and maintain a healthy immune system. The best way you can do that is this particular product that I always use, which is the Body Ecology Kefir and Culture Starters. They are a freeze-dried probiotic powder that are specific to the exact microbes that you need in your gut to help you thrive. So this isn't a wild fermented type of bacteria where you're getting random bacteria that are airborne that you don't know necessarily what they are, like when you make kombucha or any other wild ferment. This is specific. You are growing these cultures in a vegetable product or a coconut kefir or a dairy kefir or a goat's kefir using these starters. And you can look at them and get them on my products page on healthygutgirl.com. And you can also look at the videos that I have up there to teach you how to make them. The Body Ecology website has a course that they offer that I teach called the Fermentation Course. So you can look that up and learn how to make these foods yourself. So that's your first line of defense that you can do is in your own home, practically for free, and on your own. So that's what I want you to do is check that out. So please, without further ado, let's welcome back my wonderful, beautiful, amazing, intelligent, brilliant friend, Rachel Lazenby, and let's talk about that thing we've been avoiding for a while. Hi, Rachel.
Hi, Kat. Thanks for having me.
Oh, great. I'm so happy to have you here. So let's just jump right in, and let's first talk about why this is of interest to you, this subject.
Well, it's of particular interest to me because I have three boys, and in June of 2015, California passed the law SB 277 requiring vaccinations for all children entering school. And when that happened, I was especially concerned because my main concern is a person should be able to make a choice, an educated decision about this rather than being forced to do something on a global scale without regard to individual characteristics, health history, and other factors that might cause a person to have a negative reaction. And I already had a son who'd had some negative reactions to things. He's a very highly allergic individual. And I had made a choice not to vaccinate my younger two, although my oldest son had had his full set of vaccinations. And
at that time, how many were on the schedule when he was a child?
Well, he was born in 2004. So he was at the schedule that is currently exists, which is by the age of 18, they're having 267 shots.
Whoa, I didn't know that.
So, yeah, and he also was given his MMR accidentally at 3 months. And I wasn't even aware that that had been done until I went in for his 12-month checkup, and they said, why was this given? I actually didn't know because I hadn't seen that it was written down on his vaccination schedule. And they wanted to repeat it because they said he was too young. And I said no because he was sick at the time, and it's recommended not to vaccinate when kids are ill. So at that point, I didn't do a repeat MMR, but I did complete his schedule up to age 5, and he started to have some severe food allergies and things like that. So I ended up deciding not to vaccinate him further, and he was in school and everything was fine, and then this law was passed. So it became an issue of concern for me given his health history, my health history, which I have a lot of allergies as well. And when we get into that topic, we look at the family history of autoimmune conditions or a high amount of allergy in one of the parents or one of the siblings that would indicate that that person might be at risk. So I didn't have to really deal with it until he was getting ready to go into seventh grade. Once this law passed for him. And then I have two younger ones that one was already in school, so he doesn't have to worry about it until he transfers to sixth grade out of the current school. And then my baby, who is entering TK, based on Jake's history, I was concerned about vaccinating either one of them. And so I was able to find a pediatrician who did the blood work to check for whether or not he had a genetic mutation for being a poor methylator, and if he had any allergies to any of the vaccine components. And it turns out that he did.
So for those people who didn't hear the glutathione podcast with Rachel and I, which I highly recommend you listen to a couple podcasts ago, she talks about, for those of you who don't know what she's talking about when she says a poor methylator or the gene mutation, just quickly, can you tell us what that means?
So when people have a tendency to react to things with allergies, we can look at genetically whether or not they're methylating through a blood test. And that we know also can change over time based on the person's toxic load, what they're taking nutritionally and things like that. But the 5-MTHFR test, you can be heterozygous or homozygous for being an undermethylator. And it turns out that Blake, the youngest, was heterozygous for being an undermethylator. And then he also had an egg allergy. So my pediatrician said I'll be able to write him an exemption based on, you know, if I do see anything in the labs and based on the family history. It all has to be, you know, above the table. But based on those two factors, he wrote me an exemption, and then including the fact that our oldest has class 5 nut allergy and several other highly allergic symptoms, and my allergy profile, he was very confident that Blake should not get the vaccines, and then he was able to give me a lifetime exemption for Jake based on his blood work.
Wow. That's great. So my first question would be, you know, how easy is it for someone in these states where the laws are so stringent on vaccinating, how easy is it to find a doctor who not only thinks like him, like your doctor, but also insurance will cover getting a test like the MTHFR to check for that test, you know, that genetic test. As far as I know, not a lot of insurance covers that test. In fact,
correct,
you've got to go through companies like the 23andMe test or those mm-hmm. types of things that are very expensive. So it
yeah.
really, all right away, it puts...
Right away,
you know,
it's cost prohibitive.
It's
yeah.
cost prohibitive, and it isolates who gets to do it.
Mm-hmm. Go yeah, on. I had to spend out of pocket about $500 for the labs, plus an additional $350 for him to interpret the labs. And then I pay, and we have great insurance, but a lot of doctors are now running a membership practice where you pay a monthly membership fee as well.
Like a concierge practice.
Yes.
Yeah,
so it does get expensive, but in my case, I felt that it was worth it, but it's very unfortunate that is what it costs. And a lot of people who desperately need this kind of testing may be unaffordable for them. And that's the problem. And so it becomes a money game, you know, once again. And doctors are offered, you know, they're offering discounts to people, to their practices that are getting the vaccinations. And we were actually discharged from our previous pediatrician because of my vaccination stance with my younger two. And my kids were rarely ever sick. And she sent me a letter and said, I invite you to find somebody who shares your views, but you have 30 days to find a new pediatrician.
Wow. That is very disturbing. You know, I actually know a handful of pharmaceutical reps, and one of them said that they give out basketball tickets and family Disney cruise tickets to doctors that have the highest sale of particular vaccinations. I mean,
that doesn't
surprise
me.
We laugh in a like, what else can you do but laugh? If you don't laugh, you'll cry.
Right.
So anyway, okay. So moving on.
That is interesting.
Yeah.
It's very. It's not very unbiased at that point, is it?
Okay. So this is where your interest is, because you had a personal experience with your eldest son, who to this day is still, it's a full-time job for you to manage his reactions to, you have basically become a clinical practitioner, a nutritionist. Your profession is now a practitioner, a health practitioner, almost so that you can manage and maintain your son's health.
Absolutely.
Who has time to do that? You did. You made time for that. But, you know, what you have to do. That's how proactive you have to become.
Yeah, it is. If you want to really see them succeed and feel good, and, you know, he's an athlete, and we were, you know, concerned about his oxygenation. He seemed to just get winded too easily, and he was sick all the time when he was younger, and it's been a very long process getting him out of the woods with certain things. And fortunately, it is what I do for a living, and if I didn't, it would be much more overwhelming. Mm-hmm. And it still is, you know, it's a daily grind. Mm-hmm. And he fortunately is old enough to swallow capsules. He's able to feel his improvements, which helps when they're young and they don't really know what they're doing and why they're doing it. It's much, much harder. And I had to start with him really young because he got really sick when he was one. So we've been doing this for a long time.
Mm-hmm. And you see the dramatic difference in the health of your other two.
Yes.
And Jake. It's quite dramatic, isn't it?
They are, first of all, they're a lot bigger. They put on weight easier. They rarely get sick, and they have no allergies. I think they have food intolerances, which kind of like we all do, to mm-hmm. certain things like dairy and wheat.
Welcome to the
America.
21st century.
Yeah. But they have not been inoculated. And also, when I had them, I didn't have any amalgam fillings in my teeth. So on top of not vaccinating them, I didn't have the same amount of mercury in my body. And we know that when somebody is vaccinated and they already have a high level of methylmercury in their body, then it makes the load that much more dangerous.
So what you're saying is basically if the mother has an amalgam load, so she's got mercury fillings in her teeth, you know, science shows that as time goes on, these, as you chew and bite and heat them and chill them and drink hot things and cold things and grind your teeth at night, that the amalgam slowly starts to erode, and whether it's in a fume form or it's actually micro pieces of this mercury that gets liberated into the bloodstream, it can make its way into the brain, it can make its way the blood, the organs, and of course it can cross over into the placenta and make its way into the baby's body as well. So that's why a fetus might be born with a mercury mm-hmm. load already. And then on top
Correct.
Of that, so we're getting to the good stuff here, which is, well, first I want to say say again, pointing back to that last podcast that we did with Rachel on glutathione, please listen to it. She goes into some great detail about his allergies, about Jake's allergies, and some experiences that she had that literally left my jaw open through the podcast, like, oh my God, it was amazing. So you really should listen to it. So let's jump into that. So, you know, there are many, many things that people say about vaccines. They say that the anti, let's say anti-vaxxers or people who are against vaccines say, they say it's the mercury, it's the, which is the thimerosal that's in it. It's the antifreeze, it's the MSG, it's the this, it's the that. What are the ingredients of a vaccine, of your typical vaccination, and why are those in there? Why can't they just clean them up? Why can't they just clean them up?
Let's just... Well, they decided to pull the mercury out, the thimerosal out, in the 90s. But what we found was they were still allowed to sell the old batches. So even though it had been pulled technically from the new batches being made, kids up through 2008 were still getting injected with old batches of vaccines that may have carried thimerosal. So that's one, that's the biggest one that everybody's aware of is thimerosal, which ethyl mercury is a byproduct of that. And then in these non-live vaccines like the flu, it's aluminum. And aluminum is very, very, very difficult for a young individual to excrete. Babies retain a minimum of 75% of it. And adults will retain about 30% of it. But because the kidneys are not functioning at full speed yet, it's very difficult for them to excrete it. In fact, they've done test studies on these babies where the 6 or 7 days later, they're looking at the blood and they're saying, oh, the blood levels have gone down. But what's happened is in the kidneys and the heart, the level of aluminum has tripled. So it's not coming out of their body. It's just the body's putting it places.
And it's tripled. So it's increasing. How is that
possible? 2 to 3 times. So when it goes in, it's being carried into different parts of the body. In fact, it can cross the blood-brain barrier via attaching to a amino acid like cysteine, and then it acts like homocysteine, and it gets across the blood-brain barrier and into the brain, and then it turns into the inorganic form of mercury, which is the very difficult and deadly part that we don't want in the body. So we have aluminum, we have mercury, we have formaldehyde, which is known to cause cancer in animals. They say they haven't proven it in humans yet, but we're not that different.
Right.
Polysorbate 80, which is a preservative, which carries particulates across the blood-brain barrier, which is a known carcinogen. And then there's all of these other particulates that might be pieces of egg, embryo, human cells, that kind of thing. There's a whole laundry list, but those are the main toxic components that when you mix them, you have an added, it's like by itself, it's on one level, but when you start to add aluminum with mercury with formaldehyde, it drastically increases the deadliness of the aluminum. Mm-hmm. So you have to look at these things in combination. And when you start to bring in combinations, things can get exponentially more toxic. And they've also found that when things are in combination, the vaccines, especially vaccines in combination, then start to negate each other and they can lower the efficacy. So I'm a big proponent of not doing things in combo. Some of these formulas that are sold, these vaccine formulas like Pediatrics or Pentacell, are 3-in-1. And those seem to have the deadliest effect on the kids where they have the highest rate of problems, these combo vaccines.
So I'm going to try to be as fair as I absolutely can because I don't want this to just be a big bash against vaccinations and big pharma. So I'm going to ask you, what about the science that shows that these ingredients in these tiny little bit of and tiny, tiny amounts, there was a study saying that an infant gets far more chemical toxicity blown their way or they ingest it or inhale it, you know, by the time that child is two, just from car pollution, just from living in the city, just from mother's milk from her own diet, that these little tiny amounts of these things are actually excreted quite easily and handled quite easily in an infant. And but of course, there are those kids that have effects, that have side effects. But, you know, to throw the baby out with the bathwater means that millions upon millions of people could get infected with, measles, mumps, rubella, pertussis, da-da-da-da-da. And meanwhile, we're worried about this tiny little small percentage of people who may or may not be having these reactions that we're not even sure are related to this. That, what I just said, is not what I think. But I'm just saying that's the anti-vax or the vaxxers.
Right.
That's the science that they're presenting. Can you speak on that?
Well, you have to look at statistics like the pneumococcal vaccine, for instance.
For pneumonia.
Right. So pneumococcal infection can cause meningitis, you know, ear infections and pneumonia. But the children in the world that are actually dying from pneumococcal vaccines, 75% of them are in third world countries. The majority of people that die from pneumococcal infections, in the U.S. are people over the age of 75. So when they talk about what we're preventing and where these deaths are occurring, we have to look at where are those statistics coming from. Mm-hmm. You know, if somebody has whooping cough, what is the population? Where are those kids located? What are these external factors that people don't? They will bunch these statistics together and say, well, you know, we're preventing children from something, but we have to also look at, well, how many deaths have been caused by that? What is the death ratio from the disease here in the U.S.? What is the death ratio from the vaccination? Mm. And then you can start to make informed decisions. And you also need to look at your inserts for these vaccinations that are not being handed out by the doctors. I mean, if one of the side effects could be SIDS, you know, you should know that. And so that way you can go, you know what, I'm going to wait on this one, or I'm going to spread it out. I'd like to make sure I'm getting a thimerosal-free version. I'd like to hold off on the flu because they're not two. There's so many ways that we can do this in a smart way. And I'm advocating that parents should have the right to at least discern, you know, what might be a good schedule for my child. I firmly believe children shouldn't be inoculated under the age of two because they don't have their immune system is not fully established. And that's another topic we can get into with respect to what aluminum does to the immune system. And so there's safer ways to do it. Mm-hmm. There's a reason why these doctors around the world are starting to notice that there's an increase in autoimmune conditions and all of these other autism spectrum disorders that are so much on the rise. So, you know, the vaccines have gone from 64 to 267 in 50 years. And that's significant when you think about that, that toxic burden to the body. Mm-hmm. The CDC in 1983, the guidelines for the number of shots at once was 4. Then they just changed it in 2013 to 8. But what's different about the human body? What's changed?
In fact, you know, it seems like the rate of infectious disease, if anything, especially things like whooping cough, and have actually gone down. So then why more would be, you know, my question to them.
Well, and I would think that the way I look at things is, are we healthier on the whole that we can just handle double the amount of vaccinations? What we're seeing really is the reverse with the number of medications people are on, the number of gut disturbances, which you're familiar with, you know, with wheat allergies and all of these conditions, that it would seem that the toxic burden on the body is actually greater because the number of chemicals being introduced is exponentially goes up every year. Mm-hmm. So our ability to handle a greater toxic load has actually gone down, because we're more toxic to begin with, and we're being exposed to more and more things. So we are adding to our toxic burden. Our food has gotten less nutritious. We don't have the same level of minerals, which means we don't have the same amount of enzymes to clear this stuff out. But if you don't look at things this way, you might just say, well, maybe the vaccines are less toxic. So maybe that's why they doubled the amount that we can absorb. But they're also recommending flu now for children with aluminum at almost double the rate of the allowable aluminum per dose is 0.85 micrograms. But the aluminum vaccine has 125 micrograms. It's one of the highest. And so where it's kind of like saying the speed limit's 65, but it's okay if you go 90.
Right.
Where it doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. You know, we have rules and parameters, and frankly, the FDA limits might be overly generous to begin with. 85 micrograms of aluminum is still a lot. So mm-hmm. we have to look at what has changed. And, you know, indeed, is our kid in a health condition that they can absorb this extra burden? If it's a life-threatening situation, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's just forced, it's not looked at individually, I think that's a dangerous situation because we're very individual.
Mm-hmm.
We don't dose out antibiotics randomly. You look at whether the person has an allergy to it. You look at their size and their weight,
mm-hmm.
and then you dose it in.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at, does it pertain to the specific illness that they're dealing with?
That's funny because now that you bring that up, I feel like what's happening with a lot of these doctors, and this isn't all doctors, and I hope it's a small percentage, is that they're being educated by their pharmaceutical reps who have no medical degrees, most of them. And mm-hmm. so, you know, I have had clients come to me who have been given an antibiotic for something viral that they have.
Right.
And
that's like the best example.
Yeah. Or they say, you know, they go in and ask before they put you on another Z-Pak or they put you on another antibiotic, ask them if they could run a culture, you mm-hmm. know, a sensitivity in culture and find out what it is. And every time I've recommended that, not once has the doctor agreed to that. Not once. And this has been over the course of 10 years. And they say they just know. They know it's not viral. They know that this is a bacteria. And then, okay, so it's a bacteria, but are you going to give somebody Cipro for folliculitis that could use something that's far less, not such a big gun?
Well, I had an incident with my middle son where one of his, it looked like a lymph node had swollen up. He had a big lump in his under his jaw one day. But he hadn't acted sick or anything. I took him to the doctor and they did a strep culture and they said, oh, he has strep. So they put him on an antibiotic, his first one ever. And I was really questioning it, but he was so swollen that I didn't want to not do it, even though he was asymptomatic. So I started him on the antibiotic, and fortunately, one of my neighbors is a pediatrician, and she came over a couple nights later and saw him. She goes, no, that's not strep. You need to go to the ER. So we took him to the ER and ended up seeing an ENT, and it turns out that he had a balloon in a vein. So he didn't have strep at all. He had a venous malformation that he ended up having to have a surgery for.
Wow.
And then, you know, my pediatrician neighbor said, you know, a majority of these strep cultures are faulty. They'll give you false positives a lot.
What?
And I thought that was fascinating. And I should have, he had such a big lump. I didn't want to not do it. But, you know, he ended up going on, I ended up stopping the antibiotic because he wasn't actually sick. And he did, you know, 4 days of this super heavy hitter antibiotic, which was
just
totally unnecessary.
The gut,
right.
You know?
And so, you know, that's a classic example of, well, let's, you know, give him an antibiotic. And the test, you know, the validity of the test is also very questionable. So, yes, it can, you know, antibiotics save lives.
Saved
you know,
my life, yeah.
They absolutely do. It's just we have to have discernment and mm-hmm. wisdom. And I feel that this law is saying you don't get that right to think and go, wait a minute. Like a mother in our practice, she came in to see us one day and she had four children. Every single one of her children had been diagnosed autistic after the MMR vaccine. And this poor woman, you know, if you have one, then, you know, immediately you would if you were understanding what goes into this, you should look at the other children and go, wait a minute, if we have a family member reacting, then maybe we should not proceed or we should do it differently.
Mm-hmm.
And the poor woman had four children mm-hmm. with varying degrees of autism.
Wow. Well, as you know, Charlie and I, my husband and I, work with two different companies that, you know, rehabilitate children with disabilities ranging from spinal cord injuries to different kinds of metabolic disorders and autism and behavioral disorders. And I can't tell you, it was heartbreaking to the point where I couldn't work there any longer because I'm just not cut from that cloth to see that kind of suffering on a regular basis. It was very hard for me. But, and I felt like I could only do so much, you know, but to see these parents who know who know that the day that they went to get one of the vaccines, who saw the change from that morning to that afternoon or the next day that quickly. And a lot of these kids had won these lawsuits that these pharmaceutical companies have money to. They actually, I think you have these statistics about, you know, all these companies that actually have an entire division who go to court on these injuries and then end up paying out. And they have money to do that. But I wanted to play the devil's advocate once again and say that, so this, there was a guy from the CDC on this radio show that I was listening to who said, who had been with them for 35 years or something, and he said, you know, I have children of my own. I have grandkids. I would never, ever, ever vaccinate them if I thought for one second that this could injure. And all of them have been vaccinated. My whole family has had flu shots. I would never, and I work for the CDC. And he said, and people think, oh, it's a money thing. But the reality is the percentage of money made from vaccines is quite small compared to Viagra or compared to Lipitor. You know, anti-vaxxers are off the rails here. So speak on that.
Well, he, you know, I don't know if he's biased or not. I don't know, you know, anything about him other than what you're telling me, and his personal experience has been that nobody in his family has suffered an injury. But all I have to say to that is that's fantastic. And I'm really thankful. But there are a lot of doctors and a lot of people who have been on the that side of the coin who are now on the other side of the coin because they are experiencing these types of things within their family members. And, you know, the National Vaccine Compensation Program, which was set up in 1988 for payment to families that have been proven in court to be vaccine injured, has paid out $3 billion. Already.
Wow.
There's VAERS, which was set up by the CDC, which is the Vaccine Adverse Event Recording System, where anybody can go and make an event report. So that could be a parent, a nurse, a doctor. The percentage of adverse events reported for a particular vaccine might be, you know, there might be 14,000 adverse events, and then there might be 200 of them that have been proven. So if there have been proven cases to the amount of $3 billion paid out since 1988, I would have to say that there is some proof and that it's not going to be everybody. And in this particular man's case, they are probably excellent methylators. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe they spaced him out. Maybe he did some things differently. I have no idea. But he is in a category that isn't affected. And that's fantastic. And if 90% of the people aren't affected, okay, but 10% are, that's a large number. And those 10% should have the ability to choose and go, wait a minute, I don't feel comfortable with this, or I want to do it differently, I want to space it out, whatever the case may be. The problem is taking away the choice. Mm-hmm. The problem is not, do I do it or do I, you know, it exists. It's not going to go away. It's the choice being taken away that's the problem. So if we want to be educated, and as mothers or parents or caretakers, you have a sense of an individual. And when we have a child who can't speak for themselves, it is our responsibility to understand what is best for them. Mm-hmm. And people are going to differ in their opinions of what that is. But as if the parent says, you know what, I'm doing everything in my power. I'm doing what I think is best for my child. And if that's vaccination, great. If you have all the information in front of you and you want to go for it, go for it. You have to be able to make a conscious decision. Mm-hmm. The problem is when that's taken away. It's like if you were sick and the doctor said, you have to take this antibiotic. And you said, no, I want to deal with it on my own. You know, they can't force that down your throat, at least not right now. Mm. But what's going to happen is vaccinations are going to be forced. They're already being forced on adults. They're being forced on women that are pregnant. Mm-hmm. That's a crime. That fetus, you know, We need to be able to have the choice, and taking that away is the problem.
Right. I mean, they're forcing it on, you know, health practitioners, on nurses, on doctors. They're forcing it on teachers. They're forcing it on. They're going to start forcing it on anybody who works with children in any capacity.
Mm-hmm. Well, we were talking about, you know, financial being getting these labs and things like that being financially cost prohibitive for people. Mm-hmm. But when you look at the vaccine cost In 1985, it cost $80 to do the vaccine schedule. Mm-hmm. But in 2013, it's now $2,200 for the full schedule, plus the office visit. So I do feel that they are making more money. They're certainly making more money. And if a company like Merck is making, you know, $7, $8 billion a year, they're not making that in, you know, sending all, this is the vaccine income alone. This is vaccine income from a specific vaccine. So we have to really look at that statement, you know, that it may not be all of their income. And I know a lot of vaccines go to animals. Mm-hmm. There's the 50% of the vaccines made in this country go into animals, which is really
scary. Like our food food chain.
Yeah.
So that means the farmers are having to purchase these medicines to inoculate their animals.
Right.
Which ends up in our bodies again.
Right. So there is a big industry there too. So it may not all be going into humans, but when you look at how much it's gone up, the percentage has gone up, and how much they're incentivizing doctors to push it.
I just thought about our own domestic pets, too. And I can't imagine what the standards are, if any, for a vaccine that's made for a cow or a dog, let alone for a person. Can you imagine what's in that?
Right. So that's why the meat choice is really important, that you get eggs that are cage free, that haven't been fed any hormones, and then of course the livestock as well, because we're sucking all of that up in the tissue, and a lot of these farms that mass produce, that is what they do. That's what they have to do. You inoculate a chicken because then it doesn't spend its energy fighting disease and it will grow faster. That's why they inoculate them. They'll get bigger faster, and then they can move them in and out faster. So these big, you know, chicken farms, Mercola had a great video on this on his website a couple years ago about what really is going on with these mass-produced chickens and cows and things like that. It's really
horrible.
It's scary, yeah.
It's really sickening to watch as well. What about herd immunity? Okay, so here's what a vaxxer or people in support of vaccines would say. I don't care if it's 3% of people who get sick and have reactions from these vaccines and they choose not to, or maybe they don't even get sick, but they choose not to vaccinate because they have a history of allergies or whatever. Even if it's just 3%, you still have a population now of a school. Let's just say 3% of an elementary school is not vaccinated. What about herd immunity? This child could be carrying chickenpox, or could be, I mean, you know, ooh, chickenpox, so scary.
Right.
All right, let's pertussis, let's say. Speak on herd immunity.
In 1985, in Corpus Christi, Texas, there's a measles outbreak, and 98% of the students had been vaccinated. Another outbreak that happened in 83-84 in Illinois, 100% of the children had been vaccinated. So the problem is, when you vaccinate, we're not allowing the body to have natural acquired immunity. It's forced immunity. Forced immunity doesn't work the same. Whereas, for instance, my oldest son, he got exposed to chickenpox one day in his preschool. He came home one night, he had a really bizarre rash on his legs, and I couldn't figure it out. And then I thought, I wonder if he's got chickenpox, but he was not that sick. And I talked to the school. They said there had been one person that had chickenpox. He was literally better in 2 days, barely had a fever at all. I think his fever went up to like 100. And when I had him tested, when they were going to vaccinate him for that, I said, can you check him for the varicella antibodies? And sure enough, they said, yeah, he's been exposed. So he got exposed. He didn't have to have that vaccine. And he literally didn't miss a beat. So a lot of these things that we're being vaccinated against are actually not that dangerous to begin with. Measles, mumps, and rubella, none of them are life-threatening. And if the child gets exposed to chickenpox naturally, they have a much lower chance of developing shingles as an adult.
Mm-hmm.
So because their natural immunity has been built up.
Mm-hmm. Not guaranteed, but a lower chance. That's maybe some of the audience members don't know about chickenpox parties, especially if you're younger. But, you know, when my mom and when I was a child, if a neighborhood kid got chickenpox, you basically have a little party or a get together, and you have that child over with all your children, and everybody gets exposed at once, so that you can get the chickenpox out of the way before school starts again or whatever, so that literally so that you can acquire immunity. And this is how we kind of have come away from that intelligence, mm-hmm. you know, that innate intelligence that our body has, which is that if you get exposed, you create your own immunity, and that's a good thing.
Right. So, well, and the babies, you know, when we're born, we have three arms of the immune system. So you have TH1, TH2, and TH3. And the problem with aluminum in the vaccines, like the flu, is that targets the TH2 arm of your immune system. It wants it to work harder, essentially. But the three arms are meant to work in tandem. So when one works harder, it disrupts the regulatory system of the other two. And elevated TH2 activity is associated with many of these chronic conditions, such as lupus or RA or autism, rashes, eczema, psoriasis, mm-hmm. as is elevated TH1. But we know that aluminum targets TH2. That's the role of aluminum. So they want your immune system to actually work harder so that you would develop your own resistance to it. But unfortunately, it doesn't work that way. So when we dysregulate, then TH3 can't tell the body how much anti-inflammatory enzymes or cytokines to produce. So we now overproduce or underproduce. So a lot of these autoimmune conditions are the body's attacking itself. Why? Mm-hmm. Because TH3 is out of balance because TH2 is working so hard. Mm. So the basic premise of that would be absolutely I would not give a child under 2 a flu shot because that's exposing them to – that's a direct hit. Mm-hmm. on the TH2 arm of the immune system.
So let's first talk about the fact that you had the honor of listening to Robert Kennedy speak and mm-hmm. Robert Kennedy Jr. speaking. And tell us who he is and why he is so significant in this fight.
Well, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is a big environmental lawyer. And he takes on big things like mercury in the environment, mercury in fish, Monsanto. And Trump appointed him recently head of Vaccine Safety Council. So he is, because of his stature in the industry and his legal experience, he's trusted him. And I was able to fortunately get to see him speak live a couple months ago at a seminar. And he speaks on the fact that he's been trying to get mercury out of fish for years. And he said, nobody's ever called me anti-fish. Mm-hmm. I'm just anti-mercury. And it's the same with vaccines. Mm-hmm. He says, I'm not anti-vaccine. I'm anti-mercury. And, you know, he says, if anybody's going to argue with me that there's a safe form of mercury, they're not arguing with me. They're arguing with the periodic table. Mm-hmm. It doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. So the levels of mercury that are allowed and that ultimately kill cells is very, very, very low. Mm-hmm. There was I think it was 1977, there were 13 babies that had ethyl mercury rubbed onto their skin because they were having, they had an umbilical cord issue, and 10 of those 13 died.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's very, very toxic. Mm-hmm. And thus, of course, they've pulled it out, but the flu vaccine, all of the adult forms of the flu vaccine still contain mercury.
And they have these things, these metals and these strange ingredients in these vaccinations because they need to be able to trigger an immune response in the body. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to bring up the book that I have brought up many times in many podcasts that blows my mind, and I finally listened to it for the third time over the last few days. And I highly recommend it. It's called Plague, and it's by Dr. Judy Mikovits. She's a PhD in biochemistry and molecular biology. And I am so obsessed with this person that I actually contacted her because I'd love to have her as a guest. And I got a response, and it might happen, so that's going to be exciting. But she
awesome.
Was basically, yeah, and this to me brings up this. So let me first tell you what the book is about. The actual book is called Plague, and it says it's one scientist's intrepid search for the truth about human retroviruses and chronic fatigue syndrome, autism, and other diseases. So she actually groups quite a few diseases together. She groups in autism, ME, ALS, Parkinson's, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, leukemia. She groups them all in together, including CFS, which is chronic fatigue syndrome. And there's something, she's considered a whistleblower to some degree, although she wasn't. She was just doing research and coming up with the research and presenting what she was finding. And ultimately, she was jailed for stealing data, which the charges were eventually dropped. But this brings me to the next subject of whistleblowers and people who come forward, these scientists like Andrew Wakefield and the gentleman at the CDC recently who, what is his name? Thompson?
Thompson, yes.
He who was basically blackballed and came forward to reveal that some data had been hidden from, I hope you have some more details on this, but some data had been hidden on some tests showing that African-American boys were more susceptible to autism after receiving a particular vaccination. And this data was washed away and hidden. And this particular Thompson gentleman at the CDC was so bothered by this information that he came forward and basically blew the whistle on it. And that's partly what the movie Vaxxed is about. Mm-hmm. And this is a real man. This is a real person who has been blackballed the same way Andrew Wakefield has been blackballed and the same way that Judy Mikovits was blackballed. She was eventually released from jail, but she made a correlation prior to, she didn't mean to be a whistleblower. She was just presenting her data. She's an incredibly brilliant scientist. And she discovered that there may have been, or there was, some rat tissue, and I know I'm going to just destroy and butcher the science on this, but this is what my brain gathered from it, is in the polio vaccine, there was some kind of mutation that took place, and in the desperate urgency to rid the planet of polio, they created another disease. And this disease basically was ME, myelogic encephalitis, I believe, slash what is now known as chronic fatigue syndrome. And it's a retrovirus that is much like HIV and a lot of other retroviruses that we harbor, that so many of us harbor. Mm-hmm. And this is a fact. When a mother has HIV, she is pregnant with a child. She has to be put on antiviral drugs, and her levels of the virus have to be very, very, very low before they can vaccinate her or vaccinate that child. So the child has to have very low levels. Because if not, if you vaccinate that child, it makes the body have an immune response, as it does, and then it replicates and causes the growth further of HIV or let's say in this case chronic fatigue syndrome, which can then trigger, this is her science and this is reputable science, which then triggers autism. So she's finding that this could very well be a trigger for not just autism, but so many other things.
Sure.
So many women who have chronic fatigue syndrome that come to me, and men, but lots of women come. They, you know, are suffering from these similar problems, and included in that is Lyme disease and the herpes virus and Epstein-Barr and all of these things.
Epstein-Barr would be one of your dormant viruses.
Yeah, so these opportunistic pathogens come in and they basically compromise your immunity for the rest of your life.
Yes.
And that's what this book is about. And I can't tell you how many times I cried reading this the first time and the second time. The third time I was better. I didn't cry so much. But because I was like, okay, I get it. I can wrap my head around this and I'm going to be all right. But because I know I have it. Mm-hmm. I know that's what this encephalitis thing that I get and has plagued me my whole life is all about.
Wow.
So I just want to know, you know, what the hell is going on with people coming forward, these scientists who have committed their lives to helping save people, saving lives, curing disease. And they come forward with factual scientific information and they get involved and the government gets involved and now these people are blackballed. They're looked at as quacks. How many times have you heard Andrew Wakefield is an effing quack?
Or right. And Wakefield is, of all of his studies, zero have ever been redacted. All of his peer-reviewed studies. This guy, he did a study in Wakefield, North Carolina, Wake Forest, I'm sorry. His last
Wakefield
name is Wakefield.
And Wake Forest.
And he studied these children who had started having severe gut issues and emotional disturbances after receiving the MMR. And what he found was that they had the vaccine strain of the measles virus in their gut. So he linked the MMR to IBS and Crohn's. And that was that's, I think, what really catapulted him into this, you know, he's being targeted, so to speak.
And so real quick, as a layman, I would say, what's wrong with that? I mean, we are injecting the measles virus into the body. We are injecting measles into the body. Why wouldn't it be in the gut? I don't get it.
We want it to be injected for the point of developing immunity. But the problem is when the vaccine strain gets into the gut, it's wreaking havoc in the gut.
And so basically your gut has measles now.
Right. And this gentleman who's never had any of his research redacted, and I think he'd published over 1,300 papers, for them to say that he's a quack is just absurd. It's absolutely absurd.
So why wouldn't they redact them? Why wouldn't they just take the papers and burn them?
Well, he's British, number
right.
one, so he has a little bit of immunity there. Mm. But, you know, there's a lot of natural doctors in the U.S. that are turning up missing or deceased. Dr. Nick Gonzalez in New York was recently died in his sleep, and he had just discovered a genetic way to basically prevent cancer. And then his colleague, who was working on this research with him, was found shot in the back in a river, floating in a river. So there's more than 20 natural doctors that have disappeared.
Well, can I interrupt you and say, those of you who listen to my Dr. Chichoa podcast, the gentleman who was helping Charlie Sheen with HIV and helped him tremendously, and then big pharma got involved and basically shut him down, and Charlie Sheen sold out. Surprise, surprise. And now Dr. Chichoa was beaten. He was beaten in Mexico within an inch of his life. Then he kind of was in hiding. They found him again, scooped his eyes out, and beat him within an inch of his life, put him in a coma. And then he got away from that. And now they don't know if he's missing or if he's dead.
Wow. This is real life, people, and I think a majority of people just flat out can't believe it, that there's stuff that is so sadistic going on. Nick Gonzalez, he was amazing. We'd send him clients directly that had really extreme cases of cancer, and what work he did with enzyme therapy and things like that. He was amazing. Gentleman in, I believe, Santa Barbara, an acupuncturist, was recently killed. Just, again, died in his sleep. He was a natural health doctor. Mm-hmm. And there's no known cause, or they're just flat out disappearing. I mean, this guy, Chichoa, it's shocking. But the U.S. is heavily controlled by Big Pharma and the FDA. And so there's so many other stories like this. There's a doctor, Schoenfeld, who in 2011... And he's not U.S. I don't know if he's Dutch. I'm not sure what his country of origin is. But 2011, he coined the term Asia syndrome, which is these classification of symptoms that develop after people have been vaccinated with a vaccine containing aluminum. And it stands for autoimmunity inflammatory symptoms in response to adjuvants in vaccines. So it's Asia is the acronym. Mm-hmm. And he has over 1,700 papers. He's considered the world's leading expert in autoimmunity. Mm. And what he's saying is people will develop weakness, they'll develop allergies, rashes, anxiety, sleep disorders, and then full-blown autoimmune conditions like lupus and rheumatoid arthritis. So their doctors from all over the world are meeting annually at these autoimmunity symposiums. And the last one in 2015, there were an entire day was spent on vaccinations and the autoimmunity response. So there are a lot of scientists who are now, if you are found to have a propensity for Asia syndrome, such as somebody in the family might already be allergic, the mother might be allergic, or there's a history of autoimmunity in the family, if you have that, you can get a medical exemption. And so that's really neat. So
can you go to school?
Well, if you get a medical exemption, you can. And another interesting thing that I learned is that it is actually a HIPAA law that you cannot speak about a person who hasn't been vaccinated if they have a medical exemption. It's against the law for a teacher, parent or anybody at that school to speak negatively about that student or that child, it's actually a $1,500 fine under HIPAA regulations. So there is a certain level of protection there, but people aren't aware of that. So if you are one of those people that has chosen not to vaccinate, you need to, you know, make sure that the school is aware, because, you know, 90% of the people are going to be great about it, but there's a few that aren't. Mm-hmm. So it's actually illegal to speak about that person's choice negatively.
Interesting. So let's go back to adjuvants, right? Mm-hmm. So I think it's the same chemical that I mentioned in the last podcast about Hell No GMO and about glyphosate, which is that Monsanto started to combine glyphosate. I think it's with that chemical, and it makes it 1,000 times more potent and poisonous.
Or polysorbate 80.
What's adjuvant?
Oh, an adjuvant would be aluminum. So that's something that
the word adjuvant. Mm-hmm. Okay, I thought maybe I'll have to look again, but I thought it was actually a substance called like adjuvants.
So what they're doing with an adjuvant is they're trying to make the body react more strongly.
So that's a noun.
Exactly.
It's a description. It's mm-hmm. like, okay.
So aluminum is an adjuvant because it's targeting Th2 arm of the immune system to cause the body to react stronger. So what they're trying to do is get the body's immunity to kick in. Mm. So that's what an adjuvant does.
I just learned something new.
And these other, you know, other things are excitotoxins, or they may be carcinogens, mm-hmm. But aluminum very specifically is the adjuvant that they're talking about in these vaccines that are linked to autoimmune problems.
So is it true that there has, as far as vaccine testing goes, there's never been a double-blind, placebo-controlled crossover study that matches the same high standard as all the other pharmaceutical drug testing? Is that true? How can that, if so, how can that be true?
Well, it's the reason that it can be true is because there's a lot of science being done in the United States that's really money masquerading as research. And when you look at how the studies were actually set up, they haven't been double-blind, placebo-controlled, randomized studies. If you go to Europe, you may see that you're getting some the bona fide studies, but you always have to look at who funded it. So it's so true that Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is offering $100,000 to anyone who can find that study, that study exists, proving that vaccines are safe. So it's a pretty big deal. Essentially, it doesn't exist. Mm. And there's, you know, studies in all realms that are funded by people that have heavy interests in what they're pushing, that, you know, there's faulty research out mm-hmm. there, from fish oil to even D3. The D3 study that said that you only needed 1,000 units a day, there was actually a mathematical error in that study. It's actually 5,000 to 6,000 units a day. They found the error. They never fixed it. So the information the American public is still getting is 1,000 to 2,000 units a day. It was actually a mathematical error.
So why aren't they fixing it? Do you think it's because the cost of taking responsibility for the error is so high that they'll lose too much money?
Well, one of the things that Robert F. Kennedy Jr. mentioned in his talk was that there have been meetings with very high ups from the CDC and the FDA, you know, very private meetings, where they go, okay, we know that there is a problem. And they have essentially decided that it's too big of a Pandora's box to open. And so they've just decided to continue with the same mantra. And I think, you know, absolutely boils down to accountability, responsibility, liability.
I mean, that is shocking. How do you sit in a room? How do grown people sit in a room and decide to go forth with this wrong information? For example, with Judy Mikovits and the book Plague, where it's like to backstep to the inception of the polio vaccine and mm-hmm. say, oh my God, we, in the urgency to, you know, stop polio, we created another disease, and now everybody has chronic fatigue syndrome, mm-hmm. which has led, you know, made way to all these other opportunistic bugs that people are getting, these horrible things from Lyme to, you know, EBV mm-hmm. to everything, leukemia. How do you then compensate? How do you then, you know, backstep and make it okay. Well, this is what I think they should do. Just do it and don't say anything. Mm-hmm. Just start to clean it up and say, mm-hmm. you know, we're doing this because of the public outcry and because, you know, it doesn't hurt us either way to go ahead and take it out. And we've managed to make it a little safer in your, you know, to make everyone happy so that everyone will start mm-hmm. to, you know, I mean, you can present it in a way and just start to clean up your mess, mm-hmm. you know. And
right. It's a matter of conscience, mm-hmm. you know. The people that decide to blow the whistle, they have a different moral code that they're living by.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, not everybody lives by the same moral code. Not everybody...
Or have a moral code at all.
Right. Like. And so I think that's, you know, at the end of the day, you're really dealing with matters of character. And if somebody is completely ignorant of something and they find out, wow, I am hurting somebody with this, and they feel terrible, you can't fault them.
Mm.
If they change their behavior, they change what they're doing or what they're promoting. But when they do know and they continue to go forth and, you know,
mm-hmm.
it's a matter of choice, and it's a character, it boils down to character and conscience.
You know, it's not the first time in the history of, you know, humanity as we know it that, you know, we brought forth something that did harm people, you know, like the lead in gasoline mm-hmm. and the whistleblower that came forward and said, lead is killing people. Mm-hmm. Lead it's getting in our water and it's killing our fish and mm-hmm. it's getting in the air and it's killing people and making people very sick. It took a long time. That guy got blackballed and finally they came to the realization this has to change. Tobacco is
yep.
another one. DDT, you know,
yep.
I mean, how about that? You know, everyone's spraying DDT on themselves and, you know, spraying crops and basically killing people with this pesticide and chemical. Come to find out, wow, we actually have to make this not available at all because it's so incredibly poisonous.
Right. And the ultimate fact is metals in the brain are neurotoxic,
mm.
whether that's mercury, aluminum, lead, manganese, copper, zinc, all of them, if they go past a certain point, become toxic. So a mineral like manganese, we need it for our nervous system, but if we get too much, we're going to end up with Parkinsonian-like symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
Copper is extremely neurotoxic, but we need copper. It's a balances zinc. Zinc mm-hmm. balances copper. So anytime you get too much of any one of these heavy metals, we're going to have a problem. And the problem I have is, why do we have to shove it into these little guys at a rate that's almost double the FDA allowable amount?
Hmm.
You can't tell me that it's okay for me to drive 100 miles an hour in my car with my kids in the car if the speed limit's 50.
Hmm.
But that's essentially what they're saying. It, you know, there's rules, but then the rules don't apply. So that creates chaos.
Right. And confusion for sure. So, you know, we're going to wrap it up for this hour, but we're going to, this is a two-part segment, as you know. So please listen to our next hour. We want to discuss, you know, how to safely administer. We'll tell them what we want to talk about next.
Well, we'll talk about routes for safe administration and routes for detoxification. Whether or not a person gets vaccinated, the standard forms of detoxification, and if a person is having problems like behavioral ADD, ADHD, autistic spectrum disorders, sleep disorders, any of that, we'll talk about ways that a parent can start to pull some of these things out of the body.
Okay. And I wanted to read this quote from the book Plague because I just thought it was really, really a beautiful and profound quote before we wrap up. One hopes for greater honesty and a new spirit of open-mindedness from government officials in the future. When so many are sick and the cost to the culture is so high, every discovery should be examined without bias and with great urgency. Honest scientists need to know they'll be supported in their endeavors rather than burned at the stake. I just thought that's really a great, great segment from the book. And I also want to say thank you for listening once again. I appreciate everyone really making an effort to put reviews on the podcast because, as you may or may not know, these podcasts grow because of the reviews. And if when I invite a guest to speak, they look at the reviews, and if the reviews are high and there's a lot, they are more apt to come here and talk with me. So please put a review. It's also been kind of difficult for some people because they try to do it from their phone. And as far as I know, when you're on iTunes, you have to actually have to leave the review on your computer, and you have to go when you're in the iTunes thing, you have to go to the store part and you have to look up Stuff Your Doctor Should Know and leave a review. And we would really appreciate that. It's going to help us thrive and grow. And please follow me on Instagram at Kitty Martone and check out healthygutgirl.com and the Total Gut Makeover program on there that's helping people to restore and upregulate digestion and help them, heal their bellies. And also please follow Rachel at rmlhealth.com. And Rachel Lazenby is her name, and we'll be back for the next segment. So thank you so much. And remember to check out the kefir and culture starters on the products page of Healthy Gut Girl, so you can start making those cultured veggies yourself and start healing your gut. Thank you so much, Rachel. I love you to pieces. And I already said rmlhealth.com. You have to maybe get on the list to see her as a practitioner. She's so wonderful. And I can't wait for the second hour of this.
Thank you, Kat. It's such a pleasure to be here. I really appreciate you having me. And I look forward to many more.